This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A year ago, the Washington Post reported on scandalous conditions and bad management at the Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Some wounded, ill, and injured soldiers lived with mice and mold and peeling paint while they waded through endless red tape. Other challenges included disputes over disability ratings, understaffing, difficulties with difficult injuries like TBI, traumatic brain injury, and PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. So a year later, what's changed? If you're in the Army and received care at a military hospital, call and tell us your story, what's improved, what hasn't. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. In a few minutes, Brigadier General Michael Tucker will join us from the Pentagon to take your calls, but we begin here in Studio 3A with our own correspondent, Joe Shapiro, who's been following the story. Thanks very much for coming in, Joe.
You're welcome.
And let's go back to a year ago. What was the Walter Reed scandal all about?
Well, I think what angered Americans most, what we remember most of those about those stories, is that injured soldiers were living, as you said, in a building that had all this mold and rot and mice, cockroaches. But that was one building. It was called Building 18. I think that's worth pointing out because a lot of the other places that people lived in at Walter Reed were actually fairly nice. Now, they were crowded because there were so many soldiers being treated. But, for example, the Malone House at Walter Reed is kind of like a Days Inn. Like a small hotel, mm-hmm. and they got a bar in the lobby, and the soldiers would be in a small...
Not necessarily the Ritz, but...
Right, not the Ritz, but not bad, and they'd have a room where you'd have two double beds, and you might have your father, your mother would stay with you to help you out, or maybe there'd be another soldier there. But these soldiers lived there with their laptop computers and their Xboxes and mm-hmm. food and microwave ovens, and they're there for months and months. Sometimes they're there for a year, and I think that's the other problem that the Washington Post stories.
And we'll get to it in just a second.
Yeah.
But what about Building 18? Has it been fixed up?
Building 18. You know, that's something you'll have to ask General Tucker. You know, I actually asked the Army yesterday. They weren't sure if it's closed or it's been fixed up. I know they have fixed up a lot of the other buildings in military hospitals around the country. I'm not sure what happened to Building 18.
Then the other thing that you just pointed out, that interminable time, even bad conditions are tolerable there if you're only there for a little while. But nevertheless, these soldiers were there sometimes for months.
Right. And I think that's what was most valuable from the Washington Post series. It showed that there was this disability system that took way too long for these guys to get out. Before an injured soldier could leave Walter Reed or any other Army hospital, he or she needs a disability rating, because that rating, depending on how high it is or how low it is, that's going to determine how much health care, how much disability pay they get when they leave. And that system's way too complex. That's what we found out. It was taking way too long to get the rating. There was concern that the rating system was seeming to lowball the extent of the injuries. The system was seemed antagonistic as well.
Mm-hmm. Amidst all of this, these very negative stories coming out of in the Washington Post, certainly. And there was a brand new Secretary of Defense just appointed. How did the Defense Department and the Army react to these reports?
Well, they reacted fairly quickly, and they did change things around. They changed things at Walter Reed. They brought in General Tucker. They changed things in the Army Surgeon General's office. And one thing they did, they're trying to make change. They're doing more research, for example, into PTSD and traumatic brain injury. And the thing that may be most visible is that they restructured the way things are set up for injured soldiers. There are 35 Army hospitals, including Walter Reed. They now have things they call new brigades that they call warrior transition units. And the idea is that these are for wounded soldiers who are getting care as outpatients. And the idea was to give them more attention and to hire extra staff to do anything that a wounded soldier or the family needed, whether it was help getting through the bureaucracy or monitoring their medical care or just making sure they had the right transportation to get to a therapy appointment.
But what about that other aspect? You know, again, living in those temporary quote-unquote facilities for months and months at a time, people got very good at playing video games and memorizing SpongeBob SquarePants.
Well, I think that's the thing that's been harder to fix. the Army has tried to make some changes in the way the disability rating system is done. They've made big cuts in the amount of paperwork that an injured soldier has to fill out. And there have been several blue ribbon panels in the last year that have basically said, let's just scrap the Pentagon's ranking system and let the VA do it.
Mm-hmm.
The Army started a year-long pilot project to try to see if that works out. It's happening with soldiers at Walter Reed and some other local hospitals in the Washington area, but it's just a pilot program. It's going to take a year. So today, if those soldiers were still in Army hospitals, it can take months and months still to get that rating. They're still waiting around as outpatients to get the disability rating so they can leave, go home, go back to their families. And many of those injured soldiers, they say they're still getting ratings that they think are too low, that their physical disabilities are underrated or things like PTSD are getting downgraded to things like anxiety disorder.
And this rating is incredibly important. Tell
Very
us
important.
Why.
Well, if you get a rating of 30% or more, you get access to Pentagon health care. Your family is covered as well. If you get less than that, you get a severance pay and you go home. And you do get care from the VA, but your benefits are less. Your health care coverage is less.
And you've done stories about soldiers who have gone in and the Army gives them a disability rating of 10, meaning they get very little, and then they go to the VA, and they get either challenged by a lawyer or the VA does it, and it's a 60, 70, 80.
Right, and there was one of these veterans commissions that was set up to look at this issue last year found that more than half of the soldiers who were being rated at 0%, 10%, 20% were then getting ratings of 30%, 40%, 50% or more. Mm-hmm.
We're going to ask General Tucker, but does the Army have an explanation as to why you get such a different rating from the Veterans Administration than you do from the Army?
Well, they look at slightly different things. The Army, the services are trying to look if somebody is fit to go back to duty. The VA is considering a broader list of injuries and disabilities.
We're talking today about the Walter Reed scandal a year later. And again, we're talking about military hospitals, not Veterans Administration hospitals. If you've been there, if you've had an experience there, call us, tell us your story. Have things improved? What's better? What isn't? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And everybody, including Secretary of Defense Robert Gates, said, look, we have to find ways to improve the bureaucracy and get this moving a lot quicker. Then, militaries and Department of Defense is, I think, maybe the biggest bureaucracy in the world. Nevertheless, blue ribbon panels don't seem like a license to improve things quickly.
Well, they were acting even before these panels came up with the recommendations. They listened to the panels as well, but they were doing things before that. They did this restructuring, setting up these warrior transition units. They did try to cut some of the paperwork, do more of the research. There are congressional investigators who are running focus groups with injured soldiers and to see what the soldiers say has changed. Mm. And so this came out of the Government Accountability Office. They've done two studies in the last year, one in September and one just last month, and they find that, the buildings are being painted, they're in better condition, there's more staff around, and the soldiers who are the outpatients appreciate this. But these investigators also say there's still staff shortages in some of these military hospitals, and the GAO said, look, a big problem is that it's just really hard to get staff that's trained to deal with some of these trickiest injuries, the PTSD, the head injuries.
Mm-hmm.
There's one other area that where it's hard to come by, and the GAO also pointed out that there hasn't been enough change yet in making these disability ratings happen
quicker,
more quickly.
Yeah. And who are these soldiers?
Well, it's not just guys who've been injured in Iraq. In fact, in these warrior transition units, most of them are not combat injured veterans. It can be anyone who's sustained any kind of injury, whether it's a training accident. It might be somebody who's
You did a story about a woman who got leukemia.
Leukemia, right, and was treated at Walter Reed. She'd been flown back from Afghanistan, I believe, and she had leukemia. She was treated at Walter Reed. She was there, I believe, for over a year. They said that the leukemia was in remission. They discharged her from the Army. They gave her a 10% disability rating. She had two children who couldn't get health care as a result of that. She went back home, and the leukemia was back within a month. Her name was April Wheeler Croft, and she actually just died a few months ago. With the VA rated her and said she had 100% disability after the Army said it was 10%.
Mm. Well, joining us now is Brigadier General Mike Tucker. He's the U.S. Army's Assistant Surgeon General for Warrior Care and Transition, and he's with us from our studio at the Pentagon. And, General, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, and I appreciate your interest.
And we want to remind listeners again, we're talking about the Army's medical system, not the Veterans Administration. We'll do that another day, but we're talking about the Army medical system today. We can't answer questions about the VA for you today. But General Tucker, you created, Joe Shapiro was just telling us, these 35 warrior transition units. What do they replace? Why are they better?
They're replacing what was normally known as medical hold, medical holdover units, which were active duty and reserve component soldiers, respectively. And so now they're warrior and warrior transition units. And we took the term hold out of their title. Hold means stagnant, not moving. We want them in transition, moving on in life and getting better. And they're in transition because they were soldiers on the line who were deployable, and now they're transitioning either back to the line, what we call return to duty, or they're going to transition to be a successful citizen in society. So they're warriors in transition in warrior transition units.
And about what percentage of them actually go back to active duty?
Around 70%.
So most of them that you see in these WTUs, as I'm sure they're called, are going back to active duty.
Correct. In fact, 88% of that 70% are corporal to sergeant first class, which is an important return on investment in terms of getting people back to the line. You'd have to go out and assess a staff sergeant. You can appreciate how long it takes to create or raise a staff sergeant or a sergeant first class. It takes years and years, decades. So now we're able to return these soldiers back to the line, about two brigades worth a year.
And I neglected to ask you a question that came up earlier in my conversation with Joe Shapiro, and that's about the notorious, or then notorious, a year ago, Building 18 at Walter Reed Medical Center. Has that been fixed up, improved, closed? What's happened to it?
Well, we moved the soldiers out of Building 18 about within actual days of 18th of February last year when the article came out in the Washington Post, and so what we did then was move out in concentric circles across the Army to improve the facilities for all soldiers in the Army.
So Building 18 is no longer being used.
Building 18 is no longer being used for housing soldiers. I believe there's some office space being used over there.
The military will find a space to use for almost every space that they can come up with. As you look ahead, though, a lot of the questions are about this disability rating system. I think you may have heard Joe talking about that just before you were able to join us. And the idea that you get one rating from the Army, then another, sometimes much higher rating from the Veterans Administration. Why the discrepancy?
Well, first of all, I'm in the business of healing soldiers, not rating soldiers. That is the proponency of the physical disability evaluation system. However, the Army by law is required to rate you for your retainability for further military service, and we rate you for the single disability that is keeping you from staying in the Army, so to speak. Where the VA is going to rate you for the whole person, a quality of life, so to speak. So they'll give you ratings for anything that's wrong with you, where the Army will, or the services, so to speak, will only focus on that disability that is keeping you from further service.
And that pilot program that Joe was talking about, where the VA would do the rating by itself, how's that working out so far?
Yeah, I think it's working out well. It's too early to really pass judgment on it. And I know that the Secretary Peake of the Veterans Administration is taking a very close look at the metrics that we're using, and it's drawing a lot of attention from Secretary Gates as well, because they want it to be a very good product when we're done.
Our guests are Joe Shapiro, NPR correspondent, and Brigadier General Mike Tucker, Assistant Surgeon General for Warrior Care and Transition. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we're asking listeners who have experience with the military hospital system, either as an inpatient or an outpatient, have things gotten better in the past year? Have they gotten worse? What's changed? What's better? What's not? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And Lynn joins us on the phone from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Lynn.
Well, my son was stationed at Madigan Army Medical Center for 2 years, and he was brought back from Korea for a combat injury that he had acquired while he was in service. And he was stationed and received great care at Madigan Army Medical Center. That which they couldn't care for, they did refer him out to civilians to take care of. conditions at Madigan at the time were changed, and he did go through part of this transition that you're speaking to your guests about.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that change, it was a very positive change for my son and for his family that was there to care for him during this time.
What was the biggest and most important change, do you think?
Two things are most important. I can't isolate just one. First of all, the doctors are very proactive in Gordon's needs at the time. The second was once they identified that they needed to make changes at Madigan, they were proactive in making that happen. And the effect on the soldiers and the morale improved. And I think the Warrior Transition Unit is a positive step in that direction for the soldiers.
And from your perspective, is there anything left to improve?
And from my perspective on what, sir?
Is there anything else you would like to see improved?
Well, I'd like to see him continue with the program and also to bring the assistance that the soldiers are getting with their managed care brought to a better ratio of soldiers to managed care.
General Tucker?
Well, thank you, Lynn, for your comments. We appreciate that. We continue to review the ratios that we do have. Every soldier now has a triad of care, which is like the soldier's home team. It's a primary care manager, it's a registered nurse case manager, and it's a military squad leader who hold this soldier in their caring hands throughout the process to provide clinical care and benefits and leadership throughout the process. We review that ratio every 90 days to ensure that it's the proper amount. And we have a massive study looking out across the entire Army, across all 35 of our Warrior Transition Units currently, to determine what the manpower ratio should be. So we're continuously trying to sharpen that saw and make ourselves better.
And as Joe Shapiro was saying earlier, are there still questions about understaffing in some of these facilities?
Well, the understaffing is in relation to the rapid population of the Warriors in Transition. Our numbers are growing at a rate faster than we can man the cadre, and so we're having to rely on what we call borrowed military manpower from the units out there at our camps and stations until we can get the TDAs to catch up with the population.
And how big is the population now?
Around 10,600.
Thanks very much. Lynn, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you very much for taking my call, and good luck, gentlemen.
Thank you. Coming up, we're going to hear more from our guests. Again, a year after the reports of poor conditions at the Army's Walter Reed Medical Center surfaced, we're getting an update on improvements in care for wounded veterans, and we're taking your calls. If you've received care at a military hospital, tell us your story, what's improved, what hasn't. Again, not VA hospitals, military hospitals. In fact, Army hospitals, since our guest is a Brigadier General in the United States Army and Assistant Surgeon General of that institution. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today, it's been 5 years since the U.S.-led invasion into Iraq, 1 year since the Washington Post broke a story of difficult conditions at Walter Reed Army Medical Center, a renowned hospital that serves the wounded from Iraq and Afghanistan. We're talking today with NPR's Joe Shapiro. He's a science correspondent, covers issues of disability and aging, and with Brigadier General Mike Tucker. He's the Army's Assistant Surgeon General for Warrior Care and Transition. And we want to hear from you. If you're in the Army and received care at a military hospital in the past year, in the hospital or as an outpatient, join the conversation. Tell us your story. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And let's go right to the phone. Hope is with us. Hope calling from California.
Hi.
Hi.
My husband is a physician, or was a physician, at BANFI, Brooke Army Medical Center in San Antonio, Texas. We've since PCS'd to another installation, but the care, I think, was outstanding at BANFI, state-of-the-art facilities, the new Intrepid Rehabilitation Center, a world-class burn unit. But I think something that isn't being addressed is the extra stress this has created for the physician. It's unbelievable, the workload change in the last 2.5-3 years. And my husband works 12 to 15-hour days, alternate weekends off, on call.
And what does your husband do?
Physician, critical care physician. So it's the ICU, an intensivist.
I see.
And Brooke is Brooke is where people go instead of Walter Reed, depending on their injury. They have, if they need prosthetics or if they're severely burned, they go to Bansy. They don't go to Walter Reed.
Mm-hmm. General Tucker, is the workload on physicians getting too much?
Well, Neil, it's our number one priority in terms of hiring right now. We are we've got authorizations to hire the proper amount of physicians that we need for the population, but it's just difficult hiring people. I can tell you that we've invested a great deal of money in recruiting and retention and signing up bonuses, and the Army Medical Command is very actively out there trying to hire as many doctors as possible. But it's a shortage across the United States in all sectors.
Mm-hmm. And Hope, how does this increased workload affect, the morale of your husband and the others who are affected by it?
Well, I don't know, Neil. How would you like to work 12, 15 hours a day, 6 days a week, alternate weekends off? You tell me.
Well, I have a union contract.
Yeah. There's the military doesn't have that union thing going on. I think it affects a lot. I mean, it's certainly had an impact on our relationship. It's had an impact on home life, and I mean, during a deployment to Landstuhl, actually, I got a.
That's
call
in Germany, yeah.
Yeah, that's where they go from Iraq, or if it's their stop before the state. And he'd been there about 2 weeks, and I got a call, and he was crying. He's like, "I can't see one more brain dead 20-year-old today." And that's what this war is creating, this ongoing occupation. And it is affecting military families, and we're less than 1% of the population. And as opposed as people can be to this occupation and to the war, they're not really doing anything about it. And
Hope,
we keep serving and dying. So.
Thanks very much for the call, and hang in there, okay?
Thanks.
All right. Appreciate it. Let's see if we can go now to Brandon. And Brandon's calling us from Fort Drum in New York, which is near the city of Watertown, New York, and right on the banks of Lake Ontario. I bet it's pretty chilly up there today, Brandon.
It's raining. It's pretty miserable overall, but it'll get better come May or April.
Okay. What's your question?
Okay. I'm a lieutenant. I was injured in Iraq and sent back in January of this year. I'm now part of Fort Drum's Warrior Transition Unit. One thing that they try to do for us who are warriors in transition is give us jobs. Obviously, we've got a lot of doctor's appointments and physical therapy. But anyway, they gave me a job. I'm the speechwriter for the generals up there. And my question is why we can't get evaluated doing these jobs. Like, we're not allowed to get OERs, officer evaluation records, when we're part of the WTU, even though we're doing the job. And it looks bad for a lieutenant to have a year where it looks like I didn't do anything.
General Tucker, what do you think?
Well, first of all, Brandon, thank you for your service to the country and the sacrifices that you've made for the great 10th Mountain Division up there, Climb to Glory. I'll tell you that we're looking at ways that we can account for this time that you are recovering, and so that we can appropriately assess your performance and give you credit for the great work that you're doing. And we are running some pilots here at Walter Reed to fill that void in your performance portfolio. So I suspect that within the next month or two, we'll have some procedures out there so that we can get that documented.
All right. Thanks, sir. That's good to hear.
Brandon, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Oh, good. All right. Glad to hear that. Good luck to you, Brandon.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can get Joe on the line. Joe's calling us from Indiana.
Thanks for taking my call, Neil.
Go ahead, please.
This question's for the general. I'm an officer in the Army as well, and in 2003, I spent a few months in a medical hold unit at Fort Knox. And the biggest problem that I saw in my short stint there with the soldiers was more of the mental health, the depression. I'm pretty good at managing those feelings, but the other soldiers that were around me, it was really difficult and challenging for me to witness it. I saw some soldiers on the brink of suicide. What is the military doing to address those issues in these warrior transition programs today and in the Army hospitals?
General Tucker?
Well, first of all, we've established a A risk assessment that we do on every soldier coming into a warrior transition. Within 24 hours, we conduct a risk assessment on the soldier to identify whether or not that soldier would be what we term as high risk for perhaps self-defeating behavior. Some of the things that we consider are any prior substance abuse issues, any former discipline issues. Does the soldier have solid relationships? Does it come from a stable family, the nature of their wounds, et cetera? And then based on that assessment, we will customize a care plan for that soldier that addresses these issues and provides support for them, to include a sole provider for any medications, whether that be narcotic or otherwise, chaplain support and social work services. And so we have learned and matured a great deal over the last year in regard to treating these soldiers who need extra care for those wounds that you can't physically see.
Well, sir, that's an excellent change from back in 2003. That's incredible, and I'm glad to hear that.
Joe, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Well, that's an interesting question. I know the Army Surgeon General's office right now is looking at about 11 deaths of soldiers who were outpatients in these new warrior transition units. And some of them were the result of accidental overdoses of prescription drugs. You've got soldiers who are on multiple potent medications, methadone, morphine, and powerful pain relievers. So there have been these overdoses, including some of these deaths. And the Army's trying to figure out how to prevent some of these. In addition to the risk assessment that General Tucker talked about, there's also new rules to try to prevent access to liquor by some of the soldiers who are on some of these drugs. But there have been some pretty horrible deaths, including one of a soldier at Fort Knox, Gerald Cassidy, last September. It looked like it took about 3 days before somebody checked on him, and it looks like he was alive but unconscious for a few days before people at the Warrior Transition Unit, and this was in Fort Knox, actually found him. And as a result, some people lost their jobs there. But so the number of suicides is up. There was a suicide attempt at Walter Reed that got some attention of a psychiatric outpatient named Elizabeth Whitesell, an Army lieutenant that got some attention this year. And that's a problem. There's concern about these increases of suicides or mm-hmm. accidental suicides.
General Tucker, is that what you were talking about earlier, these programs to address situations like what Joe was just talking about?
It is. We've done a Tiger team and looked at every one of those unexplained deaths, Joe, since June. And you're right. We've taken that to heart and issued some pretty draconian measures across our warrior and transition units, so that we as military leaders should never find ourselves regretting not having taken an action that would have prevented a soldier's death, because any one suicide or any death is one too many. And creating alcohol-free zones over these billeting facilities is one of those measures that you mentioned, in addition to restricting for high-risk soldiers narcotics, breaking it so that they don't get more than 7 days at a time, dedicated chaplain support, requiring leadership to see them physically twice a day, assigning roommates, et cetera. There's another 18 things that we're doing so that we don't have to find ourselves second-guessing what happened. And of course, the Sergeant Cassidy case was a tragic case that we learned a great deal from.
Hmm. Just to follow up on another point, some of the reporting that our correspondent Danny Zwerdling did from Fort Carson. And it's one thing to, as you say, instruct, send out orders and to speak with, you know, training sessions for officers and that sort of thing, commanders. When it gets down to the level of sergeants and corporals, Danny found a lot of people belittling soldiers for their what they perceived to be exaggerated psychiatric problems and harassing them.
Well, I think that's part of the entire issue of stigma that's associated with traumatic brain injury or post-traumatic stress. And we've done a lot to address that. Two major issues we created a leader teach program back in the fall. We trained over 800,000 Army soldiers and leaders on what we call Battle Mind. And what it is number one, junior leaders need to be able to understand the conditions and the manifestation of these conditions as the symptomology begins to surface itself. And then secondly, they need to understand what their responsibilities are in getting these soldiers referred to help. And that in itself is helping us enormously with trying to get these soldiers to care, because we can heal these wounds if we can get them to care. But it's a strong stigma, and many soldiers don't want to come forward. So we're working very hard to help them with that decision.
Brigadier General Mike Tucker, the Assistant Army's Assistant Surgeon General for Warrior Care and Transition, also with us, NPR's Joe Shapiro. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get Joe on the line. Joe's calling us from San Antonio, Texas.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, please.
Oh, okay. I'm a registered nurse. I'm contracted at Brooke Army Medical Center. I've been there almost a year, and I also have a son who's in the Navy and stationed in Japan, and I was kind of like trying to do my part and help out. One of the things that I feel strongly about is that in the past year the attention given to the soldier and to the warrior in transition has, in my opinion, improved. The morale is better. The families, the Intrepid, like the earlier person mentioned, is an awesome rehabilitation center. And in my opinion, I think I feel strongly that the soldier is, every need is being tried. And like the general had mentioned, they have an RN case manager. There's a primary care physician assigned to them. There's a lot of attention given, and it's been my experience that they're very appreciative of this. And now listen to the comments offline. Thank you very much.
Okay, Joe. Thanks very much. And
yes, sir.
General, I'm sure you're going to find sharp disagreements. I was just joking.
What he's saying.
I was just joking. I think you're going to be very pleased by that call.
I am. Thank you. Thank you, Joe. And thank you for your service as a registered nurse there in San Antonio.
Let's go to John, and John's with us from Jacksonville in Florida.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Go ahead, please.
I've been an Army nurse, commissioned officer for 30 years, and have served during Vietnam and Desert Storm, and have been a leader in Army medical care around the world. And I would like to say that I don't think anybody could criticize the nature of the acute care provided to our soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines at military hospitals. It's clearly the best in the world. However, I think one of the reasons that the situation has developed as it has with the people after the acute injury is that, unfortunately, in any military system, we all follow the directions of the people above us. And at the start of this war, the administration was saying that all our warriors were going to be greeted with flowers and as heroes. And as a result of which, I really do not think that the military medical system geared up anywhere near for the amount of casualties that we were going to have, and especially in terms of the chronic types of injuries. Because of our better protective gear that we see now, we're having a tremendously increased amount of people with traumatic brain disorders. Because of the nature of this particular conflict, we're seeing a lot of people with PTSD. Although they're taken care of very well when the inpatients in the hospital, they tend to get lost in the shuffle as outpatients, because they're really not, you know, the walking wounded who can manage their own self-medication and get themselves to clinics when they need to be. And I don't think that there was an adequate system set up to manage the great number of chronic casualties that we were going to see prior to them being out processed from the Army.
General Tucker?
Well, I think John, you've identified pretty well what the situation was. I mean, we did have unprecedented survivability rates, and to that we can only say praise the Lord. And our docs are doing a terrific job of putting our soldiers back together and providing them a quality of life that's unprecedented in medical history. And to that, again, we can only be happy about that. The Army has reacted very quickly to the void in outpatient facilities and outpatient leadership that was necessary to deal with the large numbers of survivors. And by all accounts, we think we've got a solution set in play here that we're only going to continue to refine and get better.
John, thank you. I'm afraid we're out of time, John.
Okay, thank you so much.
Appreciate the call. And, General, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you for the opportunity.
Brigadier General Mike.
I'd just like to say we have a Wounded Soldier and Family Hotline at 1-800-984-8255. 8523. You'll speak to a live operator 24/7, and they will help you with your problems.
And we'll put that phone number up on our website, npr.org/talk. Brigadier General Mike Tucker, Assistant Surgeon General for Warrior Care and Transition for the U.S. Army, with us today from our studio at the Pentagon. Our thanks also to Joe Shapiro, NPR correspondent, with us here in Studio 3A. Join us tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, live music from singer-songwriter Tift Merritt. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.